special edition number 4, where we're going to be talking to you all about Jessica Jones. Now, if you haven't watched it yet, don't worry, you don't need to tune out immediately. We are going to give some spoiler-free thoughts just to get things kicked off before we head into spoiler territory. And we will give you fair warning before that happens. If you want to get involved in the conversation with us, you're always welcome to tweet us, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com, or you can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com. As always, I'm Danya, and I'm joined by my co-host Caitlin.
Hello.
And we have got a Chicago takeover this episode. Danielle is with us.
Hey!
And a never-before-heard host, who is a very good friend of mine, Liz.
Hello, Internet.
Liz, why don't you tell people just a little bit about yourselves, as you're not from Hyperbole, so they may not be as familiar with you.
Right, I'm the outsider. So I got into comics because I watched the 90s cartoons on Fox TV, the X-Men and the Spider-Man cartoons. There was a brief Iron Man cartoon. We don't speak of it. And since then, I've mostly stuck with X-Men and Avengers. And occasionally I go, you know, off script with Dark Horse Comics. But I don't read a lot of DC. So that's me in comics.
Yep, I think we're all pretty much heavily on the Marvel side here. I do dabble in DC, though. Mostly Constantine.
I think I'm more DC heavy than everyone else.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, that's very true. Right, how about we kick this off with some spoiler-free thoughts? So, what was your initial reaction to Jessica Jones? What was it that you really loved about it? And what was it that you weren't so keen on? And why don't we start off with Danielle's... let's start off with Danielle's thoughts.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, what I loved about it was that it's unlike anything I've ever watched before. It was very validating in a way that was like, I didn't know that I wanted or needed Jessica Jones and all of the relationships and all of just like the complicatedness of being a lady. Like, I didn't know I wanted or needed it until I watched Jessica Jones. And it was just very, very validating. And I loved the relationships between the characters. I loved quite a few of the characters, including Jessica, but also her best friend, Trish, and this other guy, Malcolm. Like, they're my favorite. And I just kind of liked how the whole season was. So I'm sure it was intentional, but it's kind of like a giant allegory for what women deal with on a daily basis, including like victims having to prove their victims and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I loved. And I guess what I didn't like as much is they went back and forth between like, sort of like locations, like they were doing one thing and then they were doing another and they were kind of going back and forth and it didn't yield a lot of results for me. And I think because it was kind of a one track plot, that was a little bit hard. So I kind of wish there were like a few mini plots and maybe a little less Kilgrave to keep him sort of in the shadows and looming rather than other things that kind of happened. But all in all, I love the show.
That's interesting. You didn't think that they took their time introducing Kilgrave?
I think they took their time introducing him, but then once they actually brought him in, I think they brought him in too much. Because there's only, with a show like this, or like with any show, you kind of know what the end game is going to be. And so all of the, I'm trying not to be spoilery here, all of the conflicts that look like they could, or like the characters think it's like an end game, like this is going to be it, and you know that it's not going to be because you're not done with the series, like those kind of events, I thought there were too many of them. And so I wish there was a little bit less of that. Like, I understand why some of them were important, but I kind of wish they would have gone about a different way. So it wasn't like, this is the end. No, this is the end. No, this is the end. And then that was kind of tiring.
Okay. I think I understand a little bit. I kind of thought you meant like that he was in it too much, like right from the start. And I was like,
oh, no, no. Ah. No, like once he was there a lot and I kind of wanted him to be slightly more mysterious. Obviously, I love seeing him on screen, but it's complicated.
Okay. Liz, how about you?
Well, I really liked the realism in the show. Daredevil was very realistic, but it was violently realistic. So you saw every punch land, you saw every bruise. Matt gets his ass kicked constantly. And they didn't hold back from that. And in Jessica Jones, it was more the real emotions of everybody. You know, you got to see some, you know, people struggling with what they went through. Nobody just shrugged it off and, you know, sucked it up and toughed it out. They really faced their emotions, and the show made you face those emotions as well. And I really liked that it was a look into what makes a hero and what makes a villain. You know, Jessica, who is a very troubled person, you know, can she be a hero or will she always just be trouble? Then, you know, you look at Trish, who's just normal and she doesn't have any powers, but she's still a hero in the story. And of course, you know, it's a great look at what victims go through without kind of the filter that we're used to seeing it. On shows like SVU, they show you the victim's story, but it's through Elliot Stabler. And, you know, if the victim is having a hard time, he's having a hard time. And the only way the victim, you know, recovers is because Elliot recovers too from this case. And it was really nice to see the victim story without the filter. It was the victims were recovering for themselves and not necessarily on their own because they had a bunch of support around them, but it was their struggle. It wasn't, you know, oh, the cop struggle with victims. It was the actual victim struggle. So I like that a lot. What I didn't really love about the show wasn't necessarily the show itself. I don't have many criticisms about the show, but I know the fandom is going to be rough. There's going to be corners of the fandom where I can't go because people are going to be apologistic and they're going to have these weird, convoluted arguments and they're going to ship things that I just can't ship. So I think that's going to be a real problem for me, but not the show itself.
Yeah, you definitely will not be alone there. And it has started emerging a particular ship, so to speak, in certain dark corners of the internet. But yeah, we'll get into that relationship a little bit further into the spoiler talk. Caitlin, how about you? What did you love? What did you maybe not love so much about Jessica Jones?
Oh, what didn't I love? I really love a lot of what Danielle and Liz have said. Thinking about Jessica Jones just as a superhero show, I love that it's a more psychological story, that it focuses far more on, you know, responses to things that superheroes go through. And so often we see in these narratives that they kind of just are brushed aside, that they go through these horrifically traumatic experiences and then are expected to just brush them off. And we don't see a whole lot of after effects because they are still people who suffer trauma, and we don't really see that. And I think that's a refreshing take on the superhero genre. I love that it's a woman, obviously, and I love that she's kind of a rough and tumble kind of woman. She's not what you would expect. She's tiny and she'll kick your ass. And I love everything about Jessica. What I didn't love, the character of Robin. And I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, there's, I've seen, especially this week, a lot of very conflicted feelings about Robin as a character. But again, we'll dive into that when we get into the spoilery talk. I'm the same, though, as you guys. I really, really loved the more psychological aspect here. And the fact that we weren't seeing their struggles through another person's lens. Like, it was all about them. It was all about how they recover. Like Liz was saying, you know, you don't get it filtered through someone else. And especially with someone's trauma where it's so deeply personal and affecting on their lives, you know, seeing that through the eyes of someone else and them, you know, explaining it and pushing them forward and so on, like that often doesn't work for me. But this was a really, really good way to look at different kinds of abuse. It was such a difficult show to binge, though. I don't know if anyone else found that. I found it very difficult, whereas Daredevil was incredibly easy to just watch so many episodes in one go. Jessica Jones, I felt like I would watch two episodes and then I'd have to go away and do something else for a bit because I couldn't emotionally deal with everything that was going on. And I found that quite hard. So it was, you know, a lot of the time it was very emotionally taxing for me. But I found it really important. As uncomfortable as I felt watching it sometimes, that it's something that's going to inspire conversations about subjects that are really important. So it felt like a big game changer in regard to how people will approach issues of rape and abuse, mental and emotional torture, you know, that sort of thing. And I guess addiction as well in certain points. So I really enjoyed that. Yeah, I guess agreeing with both Caitlin and Liz on that, I wasn't a big fan of Robin either. And I'm not looking forward to encountering more apologists of a certain character. So, okay, guys, we are about to head straight into spoiler territory. So if you have not finished Jessica Jones, if you have not got to the end of the series, this is where you need to bail out, because we are going to go full tilt on these spoilers. There is going to be no stone unturned. So, last warning, if you have not seen all of Jessica Jones, get out while you can. Right, where would we like to begin? Do we want to talk about some of the characters and then see where that takes us?
Let's do it.
Yeah? So, were there any characters that you sort of connected with immediately upon watching the series? You know, ones that kind of resonated quite strongly with you, or just their story was something that you found quite fascinating or interesting to watch? Let's start with Caitlin.
I am going to say let the others talk about Trish, and I'm going to talk about Luke, because I really adored Luke pretty much as soon as we met him, and continued to love him the more we met him. And when he returns for the last couple of episodes, I continued to love him. I love that he's this big, tough, kind of scary looking dude. And the first time we see him fight people, he's doing the bare minimum to defend himself when he has impenetrable skin and could kill them pretty easily. These guys who they're pretty much coming to beat him to death. And he just does the bare minimum to kind of get them off of him. And that just said so much about his character to me, which I found really fascinating. And he's kind of a teddy bear, which I love. And he's adorable and he's really attractive, which we just got to say that because he is. But I was really glad he turns back up later on and we get a bit more going on with the story about Jessica having killed his wife, which I'm sure we will talk about a bit later. But I adored him from the beginning, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing the Luke Cage series after seeing Mike Coulter.
Yeah, I found it actually really interesting with Luke and Jessica how they chose to portray their powers. Because obviously we see at the, or towards the end of the series, that Luke is incredibly powerful. Like, he is on a par or maybe even just slightly more powerful than Jessica. But they choose, for the most part, through the first part of the series, to play up the fact that his powers are more defensive rather than offensive, which is how Jessica's are portrayed. Like, he kind of uses them to protect himself in a way that's a lot more introverted than the extroverted way that Jessica uses her powers, which wasn't, like, for me, that was a really interesting narrative switch, because typically what you will see is, you know, female characters being the slightly more defensive, softer, kind of cautious characters, and the male characters being really offensive and out there and really going for it and being quite aggressive. But seeing that flipped and having Jessica be the aggressive one and Luke be the kind of gentler character, I found that switch, that subversion of expected powers, really, really interesting. And I thought it was a great way to play on it, because it's not that Luke's power isn't as powerful, it's just the way that they chose to represent that power and how they put it out on the screen. So I don't know if anyone else found that as well.
Yeah, and I think Luke could be very powerful offensively if he wanted to, but it says a lot about his personality that he chooses to use his powers defensively, basically, at all. Like, we see in his fight with Jessica then when he's under Kilgrave's control that he is very powerful as a fighter, but when he's in his right mind, he does not typically choose to use it that way, which I think says a lot about him as a person.
Yeah, definitely. Danielle, how about you? Was there a character that you connected with immediately?
Liz and I are on a level with this one in that Trish is amazing. She walked on screen and for some reason I immediately gravitated toward her. She's confident. She kind of knows what she wants. She knows how to get it. She's always trying to better herself because she does come from a different sort of abuse, but she comes from a background of abuse and she's just trying to make herself into the hero, trying to not be so vulnerable that way all the time, but allowing herself to be emotionally vulnerable. I don't know. She was just very complex and I loved her so much.
Liz, what about your thoughts on Trish?
Well, we could be here all day, but the thing I liked most about Trish was that she had her life together. You know, she was still recovering from this abuse, but she still was going forward and she was working hard, and it showed that, you know, you don't suddenly become better just because you have this great job and you're famous and you're pretty. You know, she still struggled with everything that she went through with her mother, with Kilgrave, and, you know, the distance between her and Jessica at times. And it was a great look at, just because you look great on the outside doesn't mean you're 100% on the inside, which normally when you see these characters with their, you know, fame and fortune, they're always talking to the, you know, quote unquote damaged character saying, oh, just suck it up, get over it. Oh, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you'll be fine. And she was very supportive and she, you know, related a lot to what Jessica was going through. But she also tried to get her through it as well. But she wasn't, like, condescending about it. And I really like that about her.
Trish was the character that I connected with on quite a deep level as well. Like, there was something about her that I immediately gravitated towards. I thought she was fascinating. The way that... because she suffered a lot of abuse at the hands of her mother. And it was physical abuse and emotional abuse as well. And it was really interesting to see the way that she dealt with that almost, because it's almost normalized abuse as well, that kind of abuse, and how she dealt with it and how she came out the other side and gained control over her life and carved a new space for herself in a world without her mother imposing herself on her. And it was really, like, it was really fascinating to see that journey kind of playing out through the entire series. Like, I thought it was great. And it was just so interesting to see it played against Jessica's trauma as well, especially after the whole deal with Simpson and what he did to her under Kilgrave's control and how she kind of retreated into herself immediately after that, and then how she dragged herself back out of it bit by bit. Like, I just thought every single person who was a victim in this series was fascinating because of the way that they dealt with it personally and how they came out the other side, because there were so many different shades of abuse in this show, and it just went to show that it doesn't matter what walk of life you come from, you're not immune to anything like this happening to you, which is, it's an absolutely terrifying thing to be putting in a show, but it's a very important thing to be putting out there for people to watch and understand, because it's really difficult sometimes to have these conversations when a lot of people, for a lot of people, it's kind of taboo to talk about this sort of stuff, or they brush it off, or they make apologies for it, or they kind of normalize it and minimize it. And I just think this show is so important for the fact that it's changing the conversation. Like, you even see it in the media right now with how they're reacting to this show. Like, the conversation is changing, and that, yeah. How about characters that grew on you? So ones that maybe you didn't initially like, but eventually you came around to really liking towards the end of the series. And why don't we start with Liz this time?
Jerry really grew on me as the story kind of continued on. You know, she's not... I wouldn't say she's a likable character. I didn't quite like her, but I was interested in her story and I wanted to know more. You know, how did she get to the position she's in? Was there a time the marriage was happy? You know, was there a time, you know, she wasn't such a, you know, quote unquote corrupt character? Cause I don't think she's corrupt. I think she's just flawed. And, you know, I just want to know more about where she comes from and how she got there. And, you know, the relationship with her and the other characters on the show is kind of touched on because she is a kind of a side character. But, you know, in the comics, she's a guy. Why did they decide in the show to make her a woman? Whose decision was that? What was the thought behind it? I'd love to know that. But, you know, just more information on Jerry I'd really like. That would solve all these questions I have.
Danielle, how about you?
Malcolm. I really loved Malcolm's character, and I am very surprised that I do. When we first meet him, he's the stoner down the hall. He can't even get into his apartment. He's always fumbling with his keys. He's always just kind of standing there. And it's not to say that I disliked him at that point, but I think that, I don't even remember who said it, but at one point within the first few episodes, they're talking about how there are certain types of people that you just overlook and you just do it naturally. You overlook these people and they could come around and surprise you. And I mean, that has stuck with me, especially in thinking about Malcolm's character. Like we have no idea how much of a kind soul he is. We have no idea about his aspirations and we have no urge to really find out until he kind of starts coming around back into himself again. And so that was kind of a lesson moment for me, if you will. Like, even though I don't think I'm overlooking people, I am. And Malcolm kind of showed me that. I don't know. I loved his character.
Yeah, Malcolm was the character that really grew on me as well. I kind of started out writing him off as just a character that was filling out the personality of Jessica's building. And, you know, people that she had to interact with as she was trying to come in and out and work around her day-to-day life. But then obviously as we get the reveal that Kilgrave has kind of gotten his hands on him and basically turned him into an addict in order to manipulate him outside of using his powers, like, and literally the fact that he destroyed his life. Like, the more we learned about Malcolm, the more my heart broke for him, and the more that, especially as he comes out the other side of, like, going cold turkey on his addiction, obviously that's probably not the last that we're going to see of it, and we will probably see him continue to struggle with it. But the fact that we see him fall almost immediately back into the role that he was trying to fill prior to him becoming a drug addict, like, he wanted to go into social work, and seeing him helm the support group and literally falling straight back into that as soon as he's not using the drugs as a crutch as much, you know, that was, I just thought it was a really beautiful arc through the entire series. And the fact that even though he tries to help Jessica, he tries to support her, he tries to do a lot to help her, he knows how to tell her when to cut out her crap, essentially. And it takes a strong person to be able to do that, especially when he's seen what Jessica is capable of. But I like the effect that both Malcolm and Trish had on Jessica. And yeah, he's definitely a character that grew on me. Caitlin, how about you?
I'm going to be redundant and also say Malcolm. to add on to what you guys have been saying, I think Malcolm is important. He's kind of like Simpson, who I know we're going to talk about in the next category, but they show that it's not only women who are victims in this show. Men are also victimized, and they also have to go through their arcs of kind of reclaiming their narratives, whether it's in a positive way, which it was for Malcolm, or in a negative way, which we see with Simpson. So I was really rooting for him, especially as he is reclaiming his life, because he is reclaiming that narrative. And I think it's important that Jessica Jones really does show that both men and women are victimized and gives them both the opportunity to reclaim their stories and their lives.
Yeah, that was something that was really important to me, because sometimes when you talk about victims of trauma and abuse and everything like that, you sometimes people will forget that as much as women are predominantly at the receiving end of this abuse, which you do see the vast majority of the people who suffer abuse, both at Kilgrave's hand and otherwise, are women. You know, even in the minor characters that you see scattered throughout. But, yeah, it's kind of just, it's still important to kind of put the spotlight on the fact that men also go through this. They are also subject to emotional manipulation and abuse. So, yeah, that was another thing that I thought was really important from this series. But, yeah. How about characters that you started out loving, but you did a complete 180 on as the series progressed? Why don't we start out with Danielle this time?
I mean, I feel like I have the popular opinion, so if everybody wants to just chime in at once, maybe, and say, Simpson?
Yes,
Simpson. Here, okay, I was duped. Let's start out with that. I am a huge Steve Rogers fan. I love him, and this show played on my love for Steve Rogers in a way that I was not expecting, in that they took this guy, Simpson, and he was a victim. He was a victim of mind control. He kind of crawled out of it, and he was trying to figure out what to do next. And they made him look just like Chris Evans's Steve Rogers, and kind of subliminally made me trust him, made me love him. And then I don't even know how I can even explain it, but just the 180, or like the 180 that I felt on my end, I was seeing something completely different from what he was actually doing or where he was actually going because of my love for Steve Rogers, if that makes sense. Well, and so I thought that was well done.
I think they were trying to play it off initially like he was trying to be helpful and coming out of this in a positive way. But then he starts getting more and more obsessed with it. So while it seems like at the beginning he's coming from at it from a good place, it really snowballs. So I don't know that it was necessarily that you were duped, but it was that he got progressively worse as it goes on.
I'd like to think that. Let's say that instead of that I got duped.
I'll admit I got tricked. I mean, you know, I'm always rooting for the cop in most shows, so, you know, I was thinking, okay, he's going to struggle, and then he's going to find a way to be this really awesome hero. And no, it didn't work out that way, and I was crushed. Darn you writers.
I mean, he's based off, as we get hints throughout the season, from a character who's in the comics called Nuke, but his actual name in the comics is Frank Simpson rather than Will. But they drop enough hints throughout it. So when he was first introduced and you see him and they set him up and you start getting little threads and we started getting more hints, I was like, oh, he really is Nuke. Oh, they're really going there with him. And I was literally waiting for him to do the worst possible stuff. And because I didn't necessarily dislike him to start out, I was kind of rooting for him despite having that niggling thought in the back of my head that they were going to change him into a potential villain character. But yeah, I guess him being almost Captain America light in his looks, like almost an I can't believe it's not Steve Rogers look. Yeah, that's really disarming, because we've come to, I guess, expect with that sort of look and almost wholesomeness, especially when it comes to Steve, and obviously our other kind of blonde-haired, blue-eyed character is Thor, so an almost innocence and almost well-meaningness to the character. So it's not that people got completely duped by the story and by the character into believing and then getting kind of blindsided by the fact that he is completely off the rails. You know, I think that was incredibly intentional in the narrative to kind of push it that way, and make us feel very specific things about Simpson. So I wouldn't feel bad about that, Danielle. Why don't we get into the two characters who make up the meat of this whole story then? So Jessica and Kilgrave. So obviously when we meet Jessica initially at the start of the series and throughout the entire thing, she's still recovering from having spent 8 months under Kilgrave's control fully and completely. And you know, we learn that not only is that mental and emotional torture, but we're also led to believe it's physical as well. So that actually goes a step further than the comics, but it just, seeing her and how she has to deal with it through abusing substances. So we get to see, obviously we see Malcolm with his drug abuse, but we also see Jessica and her alcohol abuse. But how did you feel that they handled her trauma? And did you feel that they did it sensitively? Did you feel like it did it justice? Or do you think that they could have done more? Just throwing it out there to try and gauge how you guys felt that they dealt with Jessica's character and her trauma. Caitlin, why don't we start with you?
I thought they did an excellent job. Jessica, I would almost describe her as like a raw wound. Like, she's still very much in pain because of what happened, and she hasn't found a healthy way to deal with it. You know, we hear that she has gone to therapy and is still using some of the techniques, like the reciting of the street names, but part of her personality just kind of fights against the whole, I guess, going to therapy thing, so she's quit. But she feels very raw to me, which I think makes a lot of sense considering how violated she was and in how many ways she was violated, because it was physically, emotionally, mentally. I think probably the worst thing about Kilgrave's power is not that he makes people do things, but he makes them want to do them, which is a really horrific feeling to, when you kind of come out of it, to be like, I wanted to do this when my personality would never. So that's so many different angles that she was violated in, and for a fair amount of time. So the fact that she's really struggling with it makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that they don't gloss it over at all. They're like, she is struggling. She drinks a lot to deal with it. She really does not have her life together very well. And it's rough, and as it should be. So it felt real to me.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. As someone, I don't want to go into it too much, but as someone who has been, abused, not by family, but by someone when I was younger, you know, this was an incredibly important thing for me to show that it doesn't matter how far removed you are from the event, it still affects you, and anything can send you spiraling back. It can be anything small, it can be big things, it can be literally anything. And the way that they dealt with it for me was very well done. You could tell, sounds ridiculous, you could tell that there was a woman behind this. And it was so important, I think, to have that voice behind this entire series, because she framed it so well. The writers and the executive producer just did so much justice to this, because the fact that Jessica tries to push through it, but she's knocked back by her trauma and she goes into states of not being able to deal. Like, even the way that they dealt with, like, her panic and anxiety attacks, like, for me, it was so powerful because it kind of showed as well as that even when you're that damaged, you still manage to find a way to carry on, even though it is something that you will carry with you for the rest of your life. So I found Jessica's entire narrative through the entire series just, it meant a lot, I think. And it's difficult to talk about, it's difficult to put properly into words just how much Jessica and some of the other characters are going to mean to so many people, because it's going to give them almost an outlet in order to be able to talk about this in a public sphere. Whereas before, because we don't get many representations of dealing with PTSD and emotional and mental torture, you know, not in the way that Jessica Jones portrayed it. You know, we do see instances of rape on other shows, but usually it's sensationalized and you don't deal with the after effects of it very much. You know, it's just treated as a, oh, this is terrible, isn't this awful, aren't we horrible for putting this in our show, and then they never deal with the fallout of it. Whereas this, they didn't sensationalize the event, they didn't sensationalize the actual abuse and torture that happened to her. They dealt primarily with how that affects you as a person and how that affects people in different ways, because not everybody dealt with it in the same way. But, you know, I just thought it was, Jessica is such an important character and this is such an important show. So yeah, I really loved the way that they handled this from start to finish. Liz, how about you?
Well, what I liked about it is that they were so honest. You know, they could have kind of softened all the emotional blows and they could have made it a little, you know, lighter, I guess, is the word I'm looking for, where the journey these people take, all the victims take, could have been turned into, we'll kind of talk about it sideways, we won't touch on it directly, they won't have these kind of honest conversations, it'll just be about, you know, stopping the bad guy and the pursuit of justice, it won't be about the people so much. And that they were so honest and so forward and so in your face about what these people went through, I thought really made the show way better. And they would have ruined everything if they hadn't have done that. Because, you know, these smaller shows like Daredevil and like Jessica are more about the people than the movies, which are big action pieces and a little more campy and a little more comic booky. But they got to keep it real and very down to earth when they're doing these small pieces. And Jessica Jones does that so well by being so forward and so honest and so realistic about all the people involved, but especially Jessica and her, you know, struggles with alcohol, with what happened to her, with facing her demons and these people around her. And I think, you know, that's what, you know, in part makes Jessica such a good character and also what makes the show so good.
Danielle, how about you?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that I've been trying to sit here and kind of think of an example, but I think that what this show does really well is it does not harp on what happened to the characters. It does not harp on, like, the person that did it. It does not, like, Kilgrave. It does not focus on them. It does not focus on the actual act that happens. Yes, it gets mentioned, but for every mention of kind of what they went through, you get all of this, you see more of how they're dealing with it and the fallout, which puts more emphasis on what the victims are going through rather than the one single event. And I think in that, that is something that we haven't seen very often. And I've seen quotes from the showrunner about shock value, and that's not what they were going for. And that's all that we usually get with these kinds of things. So instead of the shock value, that makes these sorts of storylines be like a one and done, but it's really not. That thing that happened to them, but the most important thing is how they function afterwards, where their headspace is at, how they try to help themselves or don't try to help themselves. And I think that this show did that so very well.
How about the character central to all of this abuse, Kilgrave? How do you feel that they sort of treated him as a villain? Do you see him very much in black and white? Do you find that even after we learn about his backstory, about his parents and what happened with his parents, that he's more sympathetic? Or do you think that out and out he is in the wrong and everything that he does is completely abhorrent? Or do you fall somewhere in the middle? Are you in a grey area with Kilgrave? Who should we start with? Liz, let's start with you.
I think my favorite thing about Kilgrave, and I mean, I like him as a villain. I don't, you know, like him as a person. But through the first part of the show, he's really built up to be this big, scary figure. And, you know, you watch it, you're almost expecting a kind of guy who looks like, you know, Kingpin, Frisk from Daredevil. Big, scary, you know, the kind of guy you'd see in a dark alley and go, oh, Jesus, I'm running the other way. And then he shows up and he's not. He's skinny. He's kind of small and he's, you know, childish. And he's, you look at him and you look at his behavior and that's the scary thing about him. It's not, you know, a physical intimidation. It's not a big presence that, you know, they built up or that they had built up. It's this guy and these really wrong thoughts and these really creepy thoughts and this childish way of acting and this stupid sense of entitlement that he has. And, you know, I like that about him as a villain because it's kind of different from what you see, you know, just to go back to Daredevil, because I watched it after I watched Jessica Jones. You do get an episode where you see why Kingpin is the way he is. And you almost do feel a little sympathetic for him because, you know, he suffered a lot. And then you get to Kilgrave and you learn his story. And me personally, I wasn't impressed. I was like, really? Really? That's your excuse? Oh, jeez. And, you know, he was just as Jessica said, he's just a whiny 10-year-old who hasn't grown up. And I like that in him as a villain, is that, you know, he's so deluded, I guess, in his own mental picture of who he is and why he gets to act this way and how it's totally okay that it makes him an even scarier villain because it's a very real thing out there in the world. You know, his behavior towards Jessica especially is very much a stalker, where as soon as the illusion he built up around them collapsed, he turned violent and he turned, you know, on everybody. And I really liked how real he was and how real that fear of him was. So that's my thoughts on Kilgrave.
How about you, Caitlin? What were your thoughts on Kilgrave as a character?
Kilgrave, kind of from the first time we see him, when he enters that apartment and has, like, orders the family, basically, to cater to his every whim, and he puts the children in the closet, struck me kind of, like Liz said, like a child. And, like, he was wanting all of his whims taken care of, and when he didn't get that, he had a tantrum. And then that's how I felt before we got to his backstory. And then we find out kind of his backstory and also that there's the discrepancy in his version of the backstory versus his parents' version of the backstory. But that kind of validated that feeling because it does seem like he never developed beyond about 10 years old, that he is emotionally still at that age and he has continued to behave like a child who has the ability to get whatever he wants and get it with the people giving it to him with a smile on their faces. And he takes advantage of it. And when he doesn't get what he wants, like Jessica breaking free of him, he throws a tantrum. But his tantrums are extremely deadly and violating and horrific. So I find him abhorrent, but pitiful. I don't pity him, but I do find him pitiful, if that makes sense, because I just don't think he ever had the opportunity to develop as, like, personality. So I don't think that that's an excuse for the way he behaved. Because, you know, as they say, you know, many or most murderers were abused as children, but most children who are abused don't become murderers. So it's more of an explanation than an excuse. But so I guess I find him pitiful, but I don't have any pity for him.
I think one of the interesting things about Kilgrave for me is that when we're first introduced to him, he's still very put together. He comes across quite charming in a way, and he's very slick. He's very in control of himself and of other people. And he still holds a lot of power in the first 8 or so episodes, you know, right up until Jessica changes the game. Right up until she brings his parents in and everything starts to unravel around him. Both the fact that Jessica is slipping through his fingers, that he's losing that control over her, that power over her, even though his actual powers don't work on her. You know, as soon as she brings his parents in and after, you know, everything is revealed about how he grew up, why they were doing what they were doing to him, which was to, after they did experimental treatments on him, he then started exhibiting these powers, and then they were trying to resolve that and find a cure for that. And it just, you see a desperation in him after then, and it's almost like, yeah, it was very, very childlike. The fact that suddenly everything was spiraling out of his control and everything was falling apart around him, like the body count, especially after that point, he stops being very calculated and very careful about things. He just starts reacting. And that's when Jessica starts very slowly to get the upper hand on him, because she's the power starts tipping back in her favor. And it was just very interesting to see what that power balance and the shift of power balance did to them as characters. Kilgrave for me is very firmly an irredeemable force on this show. Like, what he does and how he justifies it is what so many people who are in this position do and how they justify what they do. And for me, it's not forgivable. The fact that he manipulated and abused this many people, that he forced them into doing things that they didn't want to do but made them want it, and he did it over a very long time. Like, for me, Kilgrave is just, there is no way, there is no romanticizing this. There isn't even a glimmer of hope there. You know, it just, for me, he is one of the scariest villains that Marvel has ever put on our screens. Because Kilgrave, everyone knows a Kilgrave. Even if he doesn't, even if the person that you know doesn't go to those lengths or extremes, you know someone who is probably of that demeanor and personality, or you've seen them working somewhere in your life. And that's the most terrifying thing about him for me, is that he could be anyone. And yeah, even learning everything about what his parents did didn't make me sympathetic towards him at all. Like, it just made me even less forgiving of what he was doing, because yeah, it just, Kilgrave was just so divisive for me. It was like, no, you can't ever forgive him. And even when Jessica does that moment of being like, you know, if you could guide him, if you could be the change that makes him become a hero, would you do it? And even then, I think that was a dangerous game to be playing, because you know that Kilgrave wouldn't ever change. Like, he's so set in his ways, and he was only doing it or going along with what Jessica was wanting because it gave him control over Jessica again. The fact that he didn't actually want to do it because his powers, you know, could be used for the betterment of the world, that he couldn't recognize that. You know, that's dangerous. The fact that he would need someone constantly there to continually tell him, because he doesn't have it in him to do that for himself, and he doesn't understand why he's doing what he's doing, can be construed as wrong. And why what he did to Jessica was abusive. The fact that he was like, yeah, but what, I treated you so well, I did everything for you, you know, 5-star hotels and me loving you, that's, you're just ungrateful, kind of that attitude. And the fact that he can't consciously see it, even after she points it out to him, that for me is what makes him so unforgivable. Danielle, how about you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, one thing that Liz mentioned, and you kind of mentioned the other half, is that I think the reason why he's such an effective villain, and probably the most effective Marvel villain outside of Kingpin, is that he feels real. You take from the first few episodes, and I know I slightly complained about this, but the first few episodes, he's kind of omniscient. He's in the wind. You don't know what he's going to do. He's kind of this giant force that you can't pin down. But as we start to see more and more of him, he becomes more real. So by mid-season, he doesn't feel like, he still feels threatening, but he doesn't feel as calculatedly threatening or as like omniscient threatening. He feels immediately threatening, which is a really interesting change and a really interesting shift. And that makes him more real. Jessica Jones is very grounded, and his character fits in really well with that by mid-season, to the point where it doesn't feel like a superhero show. I mean, it didn't really all along, but it feels less so once he becomes more real like that. And in terms of what you were talking about with redeemability and stuff, his character made me rethink the way that I look at characters, because episode 8, the one where they go back to Jessica's childhood house, was probably my favorite, or one of the ones that like sticks out in my mind. And I found myself questioning if he would be able to do some sort of turnaround. And I know I'm slightly well known on this podcast and like in the internet or whatever as being a fan of Grant Ward. And I'm curious as if I have some sort of predisposition to these types of characters, or kind of what that says about me. Now, even though I am for Grant Ward, I'm not for Kilgrave, but I did see those sorts of flickers and did feel some sort of pity. But at the same time, I know that he can't go back from what he's done, and he can't be trusted. So I liked how complicated that was for me, and I like how complicated and nuanced the show made that sort of position for him.
How did you guys feel about the final showdown when everything sort of comes to a head and he starts retreating, he starts trying to escape, and because he can't get Jessica, he decides to destroy her in the most intimate way that he knows is possible, which is by taking Trish away from her. Like, how did you find that? How did you find the sort of conflicting moment where he kind of pushes her into making that very difficult sort of decision, that having to give up probably the one person that she loves more than anyone else in order to let him go and to get away, when he was trying to test to see if his powers now worked on her after, obviously, he forced his father to kind of amplify his abilities so that they lasted longer and they had a longer range. Like, that whole final scene, the final fight, all of the people that he tried to get to kill each other, you know, how did that work for you as the definitive end to this conflict between these two characters? Caitlin, how about you?
I thought it worked really well, and I found the whole thing really satisfying. I was wondering how they were gonna close it up so it would be a satisfying end, and I found what they did to be very satisfying, because he really shows himself to be irredeemable in those moments that, you know, he's having a tantrum, basically, and this tantrum is causing a lot of stress, a lot of issues for the people that he has dragged into this fight. And Jessica I find so incredible in this scene, because she is aware that she's not being controlled, but she has to fake it so that he thinks it, that, you know, Trish thinks it, so there's no hint that she actually is actually still free of it. And I found myself going, wait a second. I was suspicious, but I couldn't tell for sure until she turns to Trish at the end, which I thought was brilliant. And the fact that, you know, the whole smile thing that she says to him echoes, you know, he tells her to smile, but it's also what he kind of made Hope tell her after Hope shoots her parents in the first episode, you know, smile, which is what men tell women that they need to do. And I saw a quote from Melissa Rosenberg saying that whole thing was, you know, all inspired by all the stories of misogyny out there of women being told to smile. So the way she turns it on him and tells him to smile before snapping his neck is just, I found immensely satisfying.
Danielle, how about you?
I'm conflicted. I think that because of the other confrontations that we got earlier in the series, it kind of took a lot of the steam out of the final one for me. I didn't like it, and I didn't feel as satisfied, I guess is the word, as I thought I would. Part of that could have been because I felt the episode kind of wasn't well put together, in that there was a lot of emphasis on, like, Claire the nurse. So it felt like our attention was being diverted before it came back. That's how I feel. I really liked the swap that they did in the beginning with Trish walking in with the sleigh bells blasting in her ears. As soon as I heard that, I was super jazzed for the scene, because I think Sleigh Bells is a fantastic band and I was so excited. But once they got out of, I'm not quite sure what that space was, but once they kind of got out of there and then all of the people started fighting each other, it felt slightly off for me. But I did like the way in which they pushed Trish and Jessica's relationship to the point where we could see, like, Trish being the one person that Jessica would give herself up for. So I did like that, and I did like how that was building up through the season. I'm just not sure how I felt about the final confrontation. It just felt slightly empty for me rather than cathartic or satisfying.
I think for me, it kind of put an emphasis on the fact that not every battle that you fight is going to be this spectacular, all-encompassing thing. Sometimes, you know, people will go out with a whimper, that the one window of opportunity that you potentially get in order to rectify something and take someone out in that way may not be this huge moment. It may be something that's just quite low-key. And the fact that when it led up to it, as they kind of pulled that switcheroo between Trish and Jess, and then they went out, and that scene where he makes everyone turn on each other, that's a direct pull from the comics. He actually does that in the comics as well, so that was a huge nod back to the source material. But the actual thing where she plays along, where she makes him believe that he's got control over her again, that you see him light up with hope and with, like, this kind of almost deluded joy of having her back under his control again. And like Caitlin said, that moment of, you know, smile, Jessica, like, and her turning that on him, that was incredibly satisfying for me. But I don't think I needed their final showdown to be this huge moment, you know, like we get in the battles and stuff like the Avengers or any of the big movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, I didn't need it to be this huge thing, because up until that point, everything had been so low-key, so small, so ordinary, that it just, for me, it fit quite well into the scope of the rest of the season. And I kind of liked the way that Jessica turned the tables on him. Like, that for me was like her final moment, her final step in pulling all of that control back to herself again. And yeah, so I actually found it quite a satisfying ending. Liz, how about you? How did you feel about that final showdown between them?
You know, it was okay. I was very happy that Jessica got to pull the wool over his eyes and play a game on him, but when it turned into a big fight scene, I was a little disappointed because I felt like that was better for a show like Daredevil, which is more action-based, and I'm sure it's a nod to the comics, like you said, but it felt a little out of place in the kind of tone Jessica Jones set for me, which was more personal and more emotional. But then, you know, we get to see Jessica turn the tables and get a literal hands-on way to end Kilgrave, and that kind of brought it back for me. So, you know, I was pretty satisfied by the end, even if I kind of was like, oh, action, which is a change for me because I'm usually like, yay, explosions and punching people, I'm so happy. Is Jessica got the ending it should have had in terms of Jessica pulling one over and, you know, Kilgrave getting his butt kicked. That was nice.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the relationships that Jessica has with other people? So, obviously, much in the way that Supergirl is doing, almost the core of this series was the relationship between Trish and Jessica. Obviously, we get glimpses and flashbacks of them as adopted sisters and how they affected each other growing up, and then their closeness throughout the rest of the series, that reconciliation that they get within, I think it was like the first, second episode, you start seeing them gravitate slightly more towards each other as Jessica feels a little bit out of her depth. You know, even when Luke comes and goes again, Trish is almost this sort of steadfast point in her life, almost her anchor to everything. So what did you think about the relationship between Jessica and Trish? Was that something that was quite successful for you? Do you like this almost familial relationship being the center of the show, this supportive female relationship, I guess? Who should we start with? I know. Actually, let's start with Caitlin on this one, because I know she has a lot of feelings, similar feelings about this central relationship in Supergirl as well.
Yeah, we have talked about this quite a lot in relation to Supergirl, which is where I saw the parallel so much, because it's literally two adoptive sisters in both shows, and they're both shows that are kind of not pitting women against each other in any way. The women are supporting each other and propping each other up, which is so refreshing. So that's what I love so much about the relationship between Jessica and Trish, is that they look so opposite each other, but they're so loving and supportive of each other. Like, Trish never wavers in her loyalty to Jessica at any point, no matter how dangerous things get. Like, the fact that she's there to help in that final showdown against Kilgrave, even though Kilgrave has tried to kill her and she really struggled with that for a while, she goes there and confronts him in Jessica's place. And it just, the support there, I think, is incredible and shows how strong the bond between two women can be. And I think that's so important to show, and that more shows need to portray that. So I love all the lady loving in the show, and give me more.
Liz, how about you?
Well, I agree. I have a twin sister, and seeing the sisterly relationship portrayed so well, and, you know, so them being so close really made that relationship for me. 'Cause I'm so used to seeing it where it's girl A fights girl B, even though at one time they're really close. And then, you know, especially when you get a character like Trish, who has her life together, and Jessica, who doesn't really, there's always supposed to be some sort of fight, and it never happened. And I was like, yay, thank you, television, for changing. So, you know, it was, you know, Trish was my favorite character in the show, and that relationship was, you know, my favorite relationship in the show, even though I loved all the opportunities we got to see Luke shirtless when he was with Jessica. So I hope it doesn't go away. You know, I really want to see in season two more of that sisterly relationship built up. So, fingers crossed.
Danielle, how about you? How was Trish and Jessica for you?
Trish and Jessica were wonderful. I really, going back to what Caitlin said, it wasn't pitting them against each other when it very well easily could have. There could have been some sort of comparison between the different sorts of abuse that both characters went through. There could have been some sort of like, you and I came from the same place and we should be doing blah, or like, you should be like this. Or they understand each other so well that when Jessica runs out on Trish, in the middle of the night, like, Trish doesn't freak out about it. She knows why Jessica left internally. Like, she doesn't have to ask. Things don't have to always be constantly explained. And I really liked that connection that those two had. And I wanted to see more of it by the end. Like, that's the core, like, Jessica Jones group that I want to see moving forward. I did like Jessica and Luke, but any day of the week, I would rather have more of Jessica and Trish.
Yeah, I really loved this relationship as well. I thought it was fantastic start to finish. I almost really liked that how this show as well was the fallout of Jessica's origin story and what happens when not necessarily you fail at being a hero, but when that goes very wrong. And this was almost running parallel with Jessica dealing with that trauma, was Trish slowly gaining her own origin story alongside that, and the way that she continues to support Jessica even as the world kind of falls apart around them. And I just thought this whole thing was beautiful, just the whole relationship and their parallel arcs through the whole series. Every single second of this was fantastic for me. And yeah, just the fact that even when things got tough between them, even when Jessica was abrasive and I guess was leaving Trish and abandoning Trish for Trish's own good because she saw herself as almost a toxic presence, or she felt like it was the best way to protect her, Trish never once wavered. Whenever Jessica needs something, Trish would stand by her side. And you kind of see in the flashbacks where that comes from, because Jessica, again, kind of when she's adopted into Trish's family, she does the same thing. She stands by Trish's side and helps her through that and helps her to, I guess, break free, but she doesn't do it for Trish. She empowers Trish to do it for herself. And it's the same with Trish in return. She doesn't guide Jessica's recovery in the sense of she tells her the best way to heal herself. She just helps to lay out the way that Jessica can heal herself and gain control of her life back for herself. And it was just this supportive central relationship just meant so much. And I loved it. I loved it so much. And I can't wait to see what else they do with Trish moving forward through the Netflix series, because, you know, we'll probably end up with a lot of crossover between all of the different shows. And now that she's established as quite a popular radio show host, I wouldn't be surprised if we see, like, billboards for her in the background, or maybe even we hear a little bit of her radio show itself in the other series. But I'm looking forward to seeing more of her as these Netflix series progress. But I know we touched a little bit on Luke as well, but how did you feel about Luke and Jessica's relationship? Did you find that quite realistic? Did you think that the connection felt very real? That it was more physical than emotional? Did you believe Jessica's change or very complicated emotions for Luke by the time we get that scene of her talking to him while he's unconscious in bed at the end? Like, I have some conflicted feelings about the direction that they took this, but I just kind of want to gauge other people's thoughts a little bit as well. So, Danielle, how did you feel about Luke and Jessica's relationship?
I thought that the chemistry between the two actors was fantastic. I thought that it was realistic. And like you said, until you just said it, I was completely fine with it going through. But I do have to say that with Jessica on like the bed next to him when he was unconscious, I don't think that they had enough I guess, time getting to know each other, at least that we are aware of. Because, I mean, they do have a few conversations, but that's kind of before he finds out about Kilgrave, and then again before he finds out about Jessica's role in his wife's murder. So I think that she might have taken a little bit more of a leap, but then again, she was thinking that she might be about to die, so that could have part of it. But I did like their relationship a lot. But I'm also very glad that it took a backseat to everything else that was going on. Because the more and more things ramped up with Kilgrave and everything else going around her, the less and less that we saw of Luke, which I was completely okay with. Because, I mean, it's her show and that's kind of how it should be. And it wasn't about their relationship. That was just kind of an added thing. So all in all, I'm pretty good with it, I think.
Caitlin, how about you?
I saw a lot of potential in the future of this relationship. Obviously, there were some issues with Jessica hiding her role in his wife's death, and the fact that she says that she never would have told him, or she doesn't say it, but she basically, by not saying anything when he asks, she implies that that's the case. So there's something uncomfortable there in terms of the fact that she's hiding information that lets Luke give informed consent for them to have sex together and to be partners. And there's, in a show that very much focuses on rape and consent, and I'm not remotely trying to say that this was rape, but there is definitely an issue of consent there, that she was hiding information that probably would have affected his willingness to be a sexual partner with her had he known. But at the same time, I think once he kind of gets whammied by Kilgrave, he coming out of it has a better appreciation for what Jessica was going through and what she dealt with and how that ties into Reva's death. So the fact that he was trying to kill her, even though he didn't want to try to kill her, I think gives him a unique insight into that. So I see that leaving the door open for some very interesting things in the future. So I think they did a good job of setting up potential for them in future seasons of each of their shows.
Yeah, Caitlin has hit immediately on the exact thing that bugged me here, is that while I do appreciate that the connection between them, while quite physical, their chemistry and the way that they are personality-wise as characters meshed very well, that the fact that Jessica kept the information about her involvement in Reva's death, whether or not she was fully responsible for it in regard to her being controlled by Kilgrave, the issue of informed consent in a show that deals with consent issues, and the fact that Luke would absolutely not have consented to a sexual relationship with her, or a physical relationship with her, or maybe even any kind of relationship with her until he kind of passed his thoughts about it and figured out, you know, how Kilgrave factored into everything, you know, that kind of made me mildly uncomfortable. But I like the setup. I like the setup and where it might go. So the other thing that I really quite liked about this was, it sounds so stupid, was the actual sex scenes themselves. Because you kind of find a very male gaze kind of effect when it comes to sex scenes portrayed on television. You don't always get them portrayed in a way that's tailored towards a female-friendly gaze. That, you know, it just feels almost gratuitous. And the nudity was very tasteful in this, and barely any at all, and it just didn't sensationalize it for the camera, which is what I really liked about their sexual encounters, is that it kind of played up the physical connection that they had, which sometimes, you know, that's how you connect with someone first, is in a very physical way, and something will grow from that. But it just, the way that it was done, the way that it was played out was very interesting for me. And it just, again, it just highlighted the fact that there was a woman behind this show, because even the scenes between Trish and Simpson as well, when you see their sexual encounters paralleled with, like, Luke's and Jessica's, you know, again, it was very female friendly. And I thought that was quite important. But yeah, that's how I felt about it. Liz, how about you?
Well, Luke and Jessica are one of my favorite relationships in the comics. I know a lot about their history there. And so kind of the differences and the little things they changed were interesting to see. It did make me slightly uncomfortable that they had such an intense physical relationship without knowing the full truth about, you know, what Jessica did and how that really affected Luke. And you guys touched on it, so I won't sound like a broken record. But what I'm really hoping for and hoping to see handled very honestly, like the rest of the show handles things, is Luke learning to forgive Jessica for what she did, as well as Jessica kind of learning to forgive herself, and, you know, how that forgiveness hopefully will bring them together, because I'd love for them to have the type of relationship they have in the comics in the show, because it is one of my favorites, and it's just so freaking cute in the comics. You know, and I thought it was really impressive of the show to go so explicit with their sex scene as well, which is not something I really expected. And I was glad, you know, I didn't have anybody else in the room to make awkward eye contact with while that was going on. So bravo for the show for doing that.
Yeah. I can't imagine this being a show that I would ever watch with my parents, basically.
Exactly. Because I didn't want to look over at, like, my mom and be like, oh, God, should I fast forward or...
Yeah, my parents walked by my room a few times, and so I, like, turned down the volume, because I feel like that was the thing that was going to draw them in. I was like, no.
Of course, they'd show up.
Right? I often wondered what my housemates thought was going on in my room, because I had the volume quite loud at certain points, and I was like, Yeah. Talking about other relationships that had almost sexual connotations as well, we see Jerry, who is going through almost a very male corporate storyline that you typically get. So she's a very high-powered attorney who is cheating on her wife with her secretary. So that plays out, and the physical relationship between Jerry and Pam plays out alongside divorce proceedings with her wife. But how did you feel that storyline was handled? Do you appreciate what they did, changing Jerry from a male character in the comics to a female character here? Do you think that worked? And how do you feel about everything that she did in respect to how she dealt with her to-be ex-wife, who is actually an ex-wife, considering the fact that she's now dead? She is an ex-person. And obviously...
An ex-person?
Yeah. I was thinking of the Monty Python sketch, like an ex-parrot. He has ceased to be... I don't know if anyone else is into Monty Python or it's just me, but...
The parrot's dead, for folks who don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of the crux of the joke. But she also loses her girlfriend Pam as well after everything goes down, and Pam, in self-defense or in defense of Jerry, kills Jerry's wife. How did you feel about her essentially losing everything at the end? So her journey from being very, very put together, very successful, and almost getting everything that she wants in life right at the start, to literally everything falling apart and her losing everything by the end. Liz, seeing as she was a character that you started enjoying more as you went along, how did you feel about her journey?
I liked that it, like you said, this is typically a guy's story, and you usually see it as the high-powered attorney. He's kind of painted very sleazy, and, you know, he doesn't feel anything while he cheats on his wife or destroys his marriage. He just wants the hot young secretary. And the story with Jerry was a lot more emotional. You know, it was, again, it was hard to like her. But I was way more interested in this story I've seen 100 times. Because it was told in a very different way. And, you know, normally in this story, when the cheating husband gets his comeuppance, you're like, yeah, you know, suffer, haha. And, you know, I didn't have that feeling with Jerry. The feeling I had at the end was, all right, you can do this. You built yourself up to this high-powered lawyer once before. You can do it again. You know, you can get through this. And I was rooting for her more than I was rooting against her, which surprised me, because typically I'm like, haha, cheating guy got coming to him, haha. So, you know, it's another one of those stories we see throughout the show, which is people building themselves up again from horrible things that happen to them. And Jerry's is of her own making. So, you know, hopefully it'll be good to see her learn from all this she went through and become a better person in the end. And, you know, again, I want to know more and I want to see more and learn more about her and have her not, you know, become super important to the show, but still be there and still be around to keep us, you know, not guessing, but paying attention to some of these other minor background characters.
Danielle, how about you? How did you feel about Jerry's storyline?
I understand the purpose. Like, I understand the flipping of the gender roles, and I understand that, like, we kind of needed a little bit that sort of outcome, but it felt more like a tool, as a means to an end to me. I didn't have any interest in it, which is surprising. And, like, hearing you guys talk about it gives me a little bit more to hold on to than from what I got actually watching it. I kind of zoned out whenever these things were going on. And I just kept sitting there wondering, like, how it was going to tie in. And that's pretty much all of the feelings that I had on it. I really don't.
Caitlin, how about you?
I kind of had the opposite reaction to Liz, in that I was satisfied by Jerry losing everything at the end, because I thought she was a horrible person. I liked her. She was another one of those characters that I kind of was intrigued by and liked at the beginning. And the more we saw just how awful she was, the more I really did not like her. So I was sad that for her to learn a lesson, basically, she had, like, her ex-wife had to die and that Pam had to go to prison, because that's horrible for them as people. And that's kind of the whole issue of, you know, when that happens to men, that's so... these horrible things often happen to the women in their lives so they can learn a lesson. And so that's happening again. But I thought she got what she deserved in a way, because she was very, I don't know, she was smug, I guess, and that she got what she wanted. And she was nasty about the fact that she was cheating on her wife and was trying to go to the restaurant where they got engaged. And she didn't even remember that that's where they got engaged. Like, that was one of the moments where I went, oh, you're horrible. So I don't have a lot of feelings about where she goes in the future, but I really, by the end of it, was just kind of like, I don't like you, so I'm glad you're suffering.
I'm kind of in a middle ground between you and Liz. I do feel like what happened to her was her own undoing. So I can't find it in myself to feel sorry for her, almost, for everything that happened, because what happened was essentially down to her own actions, both from the start, where she refused to heed Jessica's warnings about Kilgrave, her cheating on her ex-wife, and everything going through divorce proceedings, all the way through to her basically using Kilgrave as a means to manipulate her ex-wife, or her estranged wife at that time, into signing the divorce papers because negotiations weren't going the way that she wanted. And yeah, so while as a character I found her incredibly interesting as this riff on that role that's typically played by a man, and that it was just seeing a very successful, high-powered attorney, kind of that stereotypical role flipped, I found that really interesting. I found her quite interesting as a character, but I don't necessarily feel sorry for her, and it didn't make me feel emotional about the outcome. I think it was, even though I feel awful that her ex-wife, like, she died, that was the outcome of that, and that Pam is going to jail. Like, that's awful for me, because I really liked the secretary as a character, was one that grew on me as we saw more of her. You know, I couldn't... I feel sorry for Pam. I feel sorry for the wife who got caught up in the middle of this. And for Jerry, I just feel like, yeah, okay, this is... This was a situation of her own doing, but I don't... Yes, okay, maybe she'll grow and learn from it, and we'll see her change through a potential Jessica Jones season 2, but... Yeah, I don't know. I'm very conflicted about Jerry. I'm kind of in this neutral middle ground almost. How about our direct connection with Daredevil? I know that Danielle mentioned it a little bit earlier in the episode, how the final episode, we spend a lot of time in the first half of it with Claire and Luke. Now, Claire comes in to help Luke out in a medical sense because Jessica really badly hurts him when they come to blows. How did you feel about this cameo? Like, how do you feel, how do you feel about this being the connection into Daredevil? Did you like the references back to Matt Murdock and her sort of dynamic with Jessica? Or did you think it was a little forced? Did you think it was just a way of being like, hey, these two shows are connected, remember that? Or did it feel more organic to you? Caitlin?
I quite liked it. I thought it made sense for it to be a more supporting character to be the connection, at least in the early going, because while they take place in the same part of New York, you know, they're dealing with different issues. So it makes more sense that someone in like the medical field would be the one that they cross over with. And this is the first time in the series that they're really... I mean, they do spend time in the hospital, but they're never really given an opportunity to introduce Claire before this. So it works. And I like that she's kind of there to be like, I get people with weird powers and I've been there, so I'm not going to be as freaked out by this than as everybody else clearly is when the needles start breaking. So I enjoyed it. I liked the throwbacks to Daredevil. I pretty much enjoyed the whole thing. I like Claire a lot.
Now, this was very leading because I know Danielle has an opposite opinion about this already.
I feel like such a hater.
But it's... No. It's interesting to get different perspectives on this. So, go. How did you feel about Claire, just in general?
Guys, I love Jessica Jones. However, I like Claire as a character. I really enjoyed her in Daredevil. I was looking forward to seeing her in Jessica Jones. That being said, I think that they introduced her at the wrong time. We saw her in the season finale of Jessica Jones, which at that point, I feel like little plot lines or nods should have been sort of out of the way. Like, it's because she was kind of in there, it felt like she was thrown in there for the nod. It felt very jarring. And it, to me, it took away from the rest of the episode. Because in a season finale, I want to spend time with the characters that we've gotten to know and gotten to care about up until now. And to have another person kind of thrown in, even though we already know her, we're already familiar, we already like her, it was just very jarring, and it took away from the relationships of the show itself. It was more like a blinding, like, hey, remember, everything is supposed to go down in the same universe to me, rather than like a quick nod. If she would have been in earlier in the season, if she would have been in like maybe one or two episodes earlier, I would have been fine with it. But I think that throwing her into the season finale was not a great idea, and I was not a big fan of it.
I think, for me, I did enjoy it, because I really liked Claire, and I think I'm a little bit more forgiving of the fact that it happened so late, because it was so directly related to Jessica and Luke's showdown, that she was necessary in the respect of being able to get him back on his feet, because fixing him was beyond Jessica's control. And when you start obviously seeing when Jessica takes him to the hospital, the fact that, you know, there's nothing that they can do because of his very specific powers, and Claire is already aware of people with powers and has already done some questionable things with her medical abilities in order to assist Jessica. met outside of the official channels. Like, I thought that was a really good way of setting up her role within, or continuing to establish that role for her within the Netflix sort of universe. I also like that obviously this made her a character that is now, that Luke Cage is now aware of, because we know that she's going to be appearing in his series, which means that she may be slightly more present. So I think for me, it felt more that it was a way to connect those two characters in order to establish at least a passing acquaintance between them, so that potentially that can carry on into Luke Cage, and we'll see that develop over there. So I think I'm slightly more forgiving of it because I know what's coming next in regard to her moving across into the next series. But I did also like her stupid nods back to Matt Murdock and how she referred to him without referring to him. Like, that amused me. And some of her lines with Jessica just cracked me up. The fact that she's just this no-nonsense nurse who doesn't take crap from anyone, whether they've got powers or not. That I just really enjoy Claire as a character. But I think the necessity of setting it up for her to be able to move more seamlessly across into Luke Cage is what potentially makes me more forgiving of this. Liz, how about you? How did you feel about Claire's sort of cameo in this series?
Well, I love Claire. I think she's an amazing character. I loved her in Daredevil, and I actually really liked her in Jessica Jones, because she was so done with superpowered people, and I loved that. You know, even as she's helping to save lives and helping these people, she's like, great, you've got powers, whatever, you're making my day harder, let's do this and be done with it. So I really liked that attitude, because there's kind of an awe at these superpowered peoples. You know, there's a fear about Kilgrave powers. There's, you know, Luke is really impressive with his powers, and Jessica's super impressive with his powers, and Trish goes on about how cool heroes are, and then you get Claire, who comes in and is like, this is BS, okay? You guys are a disaster. I have to patch you up. Can't you take care of yourselves? And, you know, it's nice to see that emotion, and I didn't find it so awkward that she's, you know, suddenly there at the finale. And I'm kind of with Danya on this. I think it's just, you know, a good way to get her to know Luke and to end up on that show, instead of, you know, trying to do the first episode of Luke with sliding her in suddenly. But, you know, I'll take more Claire. Give me an ER style drama with Claire being totally done with the superhero people that show up beat up in her little emergency room, and all the fun little cameos you could have with, you know, Peter Parker with a broken wrist and from falling off a building because he's Spider-Man, or, you know, Clint Barton, human disaster, wandering in because, you know, he fell off a roof from Russian mobsters or something. You know, I'd love that, but I'll stick with what Claire I can get.
See, Liz knows me far too well, because the idea of Clint walking into a hospital and having to deal with Claire is now the only thing in my head. And this is why you don't bring your best friend onto a podcast, because now I'm thoroughly distracted by Hawkeye thoughts.
Shh, you love me.
Shh, lies.
It's okay.
But obviously, talking about Jessica Jones and beyond, if we were to get a season 2, how do you feel about, like, the sort of setup that they started going with here? Obviously, we had the reveal of the IGH, which is the organization that paid for all of Jessica's medical bills following the accident that gave her powers, and is also responsible for Will Simpson and sort of the pills that he takes in order to give him his powers. Do you think that's something that if we do get a season 2, we're gonna focus on a lot more? And would you like to see that organization come out a little bit more? Or do you think that they'll go in a completely different direction? Danielle.
Yay me. I was hoping you were going to pick me, because I am 100% behind this. I think that this setup for the next season worked much better than the one in Daredevil, because that one kind of really confused me. But I really thought that this one felt organic, that they were looking into all of these things that were going on. And obviously, as soon as I heard the name IGH, like, I took to my computer and started Googling, and everybody like had the same problem where it wasn't real. So I'm very excited to kind of delve into this, because actually one of my big questions throughout this series was about Jessica's powers. I mean, I come from a background, like I read Alias. And so I kind of know about her powers from there, where they came from, the fact that they're, at least in the comics, they're not full strength, but that was never really discussed in the series. Like, they were talking about how when she flies, it's actually more like jumping, but they never, I guess, made it so that you thought that the fact that like her flying was actually more like jumping means that her powers weren't as great as other people's, especially like with her super strength. So when people would ask me like, what are her powers? I would kind of go off the comic book, but I feel like I don't know if that's the same for the show. So I would like to get more of a background in that, if her powers are really full out. And I would just like to find out more about the company and see if Nuke comes in here. So I am excited about it.
Here's the thing about Nuke and Will Simpson and the potential for this organization behind it. And you know, we touched upon Will being very reminiscent for a lot of us of Steve and Captain America, especially in regard to his looks, is that in the comics, the organization that gives out the pills, they basically are a way for them to replicate the super soldier sort of reaction, to basically allow them to have almost an army of Captain Americas in terms of strength. And it is the same company who were responsible for creating Captain America. They are also, in the comics, the sort of link here would be Weapons Plus, which is the comics, the comics sort of organization that this is kind of vaguely linked to. They are also responsible for Wolverine. So it's really interesting that they're kind of going here and there, giving it a different name, because, yeah, especially with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. going with, like, gifted individuals in terms of inhuman powers, it makes you wonder how closely these are linked and whether IGH is a very sort of intentional acronym, you know, whether that's whether the I actually stands for inhuman, and maybe the way that they're getting these pills to work is by experimenting and working with the inhuman powers or the inhuman sort of subjects that they're aware of. Because I was actually thinking on this a little bit this week, is that in season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we obviously get Mr. Hyde, who is Daisy / Skye's father, and he was using a chemical sort of concoction in order to enhance his powers. Well, I started thinking, what if at some point the government or some branch of the government has gotten hold of some of his research and they've put it into pill form, and that's where some of this is coming from? Like, I started seeing threads that they could connect it to through the wider Marvel universe, and thought it was quite interesting.
Exciting.
I know, I really want to know more about it. Caitlin, how about you?
Can I just say one more thing?
Of course.
I'm sorry, really quickly, that being said, I really hope that they do find a way to make it more psychological, because I do like Jessica Jones for the fact that they don't harp on her superpowers all the time. So I kind of want it, but then I don't. So that's where I am. Sorry.
That's fine. Caitlin, how about you? How do you feel about this potential setup for a season 2?
I'm intrigued. I also thought that it was related to Inhumans with the HGH, IGH, all that good stuff. So I'll be interested to see if they are trying to link everything with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Inhumans movie that is coming out in a couple years. So that'll be intriguing. I would be very surprised if they didn't keep the whole thing psychological, because there's a lot to think about, you know, for Jessica and having to come to terms with where her powers came from and if they've changed her, like, on a DNA level and that kind of thing. Like, what that kind of goes back to the idea of what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is dealing with this season and what does it mean to be human. And then Jessica has that on top of the trauma that she is still dealing with. Just because she killed Kilgrave at the end of the season doesn't mean the trauma has gone away. So there's still plenty of juicy material there for the show to explore, even if they start getting a little more science fiction-y and everything.
Liz, how about you? How do you feel about this potential setup for season two and what they might do as we... Because they obviously haven't confirmed or denied whether we're going to get a season two yet. So if we do get one...
We can say if all we want, but I would be really shocked if there wasn't a season two, even with how many risks the show takes, since it's getting so much critical acclaim and people seem to really, really enjoy it. But I'd like there to be some sort of shady organization in the background, you know, this IGH, them to be kind of a Weapon X type program, but, you know, a little more... I guess subtle, although there's no really subtle evil organization in any of Marvel comics. But, you know, it would be great if the big twist was, oh, they caused the accident for Jessica's parents and they're still experimenting on people and they're still out there and they need to be stopped. And that would, I think, lead to a good movie plot line. Like, we're talking about how it could relate to the Inhumans movie that's coming out. And because I think if you get too big with that, you'll lose the small intimacies of the show that are really important. But I'd like to see that kind of lead into the movies like we've talked about a little bit. And, you know, again, I'd really like to see some of these background characters not be dropped or ignored. You know, I want to see more of Malcolm and his recovery. I want to see more of Trish and where she goes from here. I want to see... not just Jessica moving on past Kilgrave's death and how, you know, she's affected by Kilgrave's death, but how does Trish handle it because she was there? And then how do all the other characters that manipulated handle it? And will someone come and fill the bad guy void? And who's that bad guy going to be? And, you know, I've got a lot of questions that season two needs to answer, so... If we don't get a season two, and I'm completely wrong, I will be really annoyed at myself.
Yeah, I'll kind of be really mad if they don't go for a season two, because they put enough threads in there in order to really nicely set it up, including some very subtle nods that Trish is going to become a superhero in her own right. Obviously, her comic book counterpart is a character called Hellcat, who does at one point work with the Defenders. But, you know, I'd really like to see that potential storyline continued. But there was also... I don't know if Liz noticed it, because I know Liz is quite familiar with the comics as well. But when Jessica refers or goes to refer Luke to a different PI, she mentions the name Angela Del Toro. Angela Del Toro in the comics is a superhero called White Tiger, and she's very closely connected to Iron Fist. To Danny Rand, because a lot of her sort of... powers and everything originate from Kunlun, which is the city that Danny Rand's parents track down and where he ends up becoming a hero through. So I thought that was quite interesting. There were so many really great nods. Like, there was even the nod about Simpson becoming Nuke, because not only from the pills, but in the scene in the warehouse when he sets everything on fire after killing the really awesome police officer who I freaking loved and was, like, only a couple of years from retirement, and why would you do that? That's terrible. I was really upset about that. But the lighter, like, in the comics, Nuke's face is tattooed with an American flag, which makes the whole Captain America parallels quite hilarious. But if you look really closely at the lighter in that scene, it's got an American flag on there. So there were some really great nods to where they could go in season two. And characters that could start getting introduced beyond Jessica Jones, and I just, there's so much potential, and I really hope that they go with it, and that the critical acclaim for this series has been so high, like, so many people really, really loved it, and I really hope that we get a season two, because if Daredevil's good enough for a season two, so is Jessica Jones.
I did catch the little background towards Danny Rand, and I was like, yay!
Yeah.
Iron Fist is really good, people. Go read some Iron Fist.
Does anyone have any final comments to add before we move into the feedback that we got?
Undying love, basically.
I want more.
Yeah, same.
And stop pitting it against Supergirl.
You kind of talked over each other a little bit then, one at a time.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Oh, I was just saying that I want more, but, like, not in 2 years. Like, I want... I'm thinking what they might do, like, the way that our phases in the Marvel Universe work. Like, you get two of the one that started it, and then you get the other ones, and then you get the team up, and then you start all over again. I don't want to do that. I want two of Jessica Jones before Defenders happens, too. So, selfish. It's fine. Caitlin?
I was just saying... And let's stop pitting it against Supergirl.
Yes. 100% yes.
Yeah, agreed. That's been bugging the crap out of me. They can both exist, and you can enjoy both, or you can enjoy one over the other, or you can enjoy neither. That is fine, but they both offer very, very different narratives. The only thing that I could get on board with people comparing is Alex and Kara's relationship and Jessica and Trish's, and how they handle those two relationships differently and similarly. Like, if you're drawing comparisons, it starts and ends there. They're so wildly different in tone and character that comparing them in any other way is stupid and unfair. And stupid, basically. Right, let's get into feedback. So a couple of you have seen Jessica Jones or have seen a couple of episodes of it, and you sent us some tweets. So, Caitlin, would you like to kick it off?
Absolutely. Gordon tweeted us when he was watching episode 5 and said, "Am I the only one seeing the similar styling between Will the cop and Steve Rogers?" And no, you're not. And I'm pretty sure that was intentional on a number of levels.
100%. I'm positive that was intentional. And it duped me nonetheless.
Yeah. Always a sucker for Steve Rogers. Or Steve Rogers lookalikes and act-alikes. And damn.
I get so excited when I see anybody dress up as Steve Rogers and they look really good. I just get really excited and just lose it. It's kind of embarrassing, but also wonderful.
Yeah. Danielle, would you like to get Cassie's?
I would love to. So Cassie says, "Just finished Jessica Jones. Oh my god, so good. So, so good. Oh god, it's so dark. I loved it. I'm kind of pissed I'm done with it already. Lol." And I agree with all of that. I didn't watch it all back to back to back, but I was really upset when I was done. So I am with you, Cassie.
Sweet Cinnamon Roll Andrew also sent us a tweet, and he said, "Even knowing that a Luke Cage series was coming to Netflix, it took me over half the series to realize Luke equals Luke Cage. We love you, Andrew.
Read some Luke Cage comics too, people. He's really good in the terms of history, really important comic character. But I'll get off my history soapbox before I start.
Liz, would you like to read Shelby's comment?
Sure. Shelby says, "After seeing Kristen Ritter as JJ, if I ever question Marvel's casting ever again, feel free to slap some sense into me." Well, I've always thought Marvel's casting is really on point. We're not going to make this completely about Steve Rogers and Chris Evans, okay? I really like the casting again, and it could have been so bad if they cast the wrong person, but, you know, everybody in the show, from Jessica Jones to, you know, Kilgrave, was just excellent. So thank you, Marvel, for continuing to be awesome.
And I think one of the most telling things about Kristen Ritter's casting is that, like, she was in a noir show. Like, she was in Veronica Mars, and going into it, I thought, what if I'm not going to be able to see her as anything but that character? But she nailed it, and there was no question as to what character she was playing. So, I thought she was great.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'm not always on board with Marvel's casting choices, but Kristen Ritter is one of the better ones for me.
There's one exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, I don't know. Basically, the entirety of Doctor Strange is a huge X for me on Marvel casting, but we won't get into that. Caitlin, would you like to get Jewel's comment?
Jewel says, I watched it all in one day and loved every second of it. And I imagine that was a very emotionally distressing day.
Yeah, I can't imagine that would have been easy. No. Julio is back. Hello, Julio. Julio says, Jessica Jones is going to be the first Marvel property to win an Emmy. You heard from me first. If it comes true, you will get a shout out from us again, and we'll be like, Julio said that. Julio was like, this show's gonna get an Emmy. I kind of actually hope that it does, because shows like this don't always get the nods that they deserve in stuff like awards shows, because awards shows tend to be quite elite and up themselves. And anything that falls into genre territory, even though they're usually fantastic and are wonderful and all sorts of great things, you know, they brush it off or they just don't give it its dues. So I really hope that we see the tide change with stuff like that. I don't think we will, but it would be nice. And Danielle, would you like to get the last one?
Sure. So Danny says, I've only watched the first episode, but I haven't slept since. Danny, that's probably not good. If there's anything we can do to help you, let us know. Yeah, because I would like you to finish the series, but if the first episode got you, I don't know.
Maybe they're staying up watching it.
I hope that that's the case, that they just stayed up watching it, and that they, like, didn't get nightmares. I don't know.
Yeah. Make sure that you look after yourself, Danny, as you're watching. Take lots of breaks. Make sure that you've got a nice support network around you. Drink lots of water. Take care of yourself.
Pillows, fluffy blanket, hot chocolate.
But that's it. That's everything. All of our feedback. And yeah, I'm sure that we will probably talk in little bits and pieces as Jessica Jones becomes relevant to the conversations on some of our other episodes. But as always, guys, if you want to get hold of us, you want to chat to us, you have any thoughts about stuff that we've brought up and you want to talk to us more, you know where we are. It's at Hero Hype Podcast on Twitter, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com, or alternatively, drop us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But until our next episode, guys, I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Liz.
And we'll see you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Internet.